It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's summer camping season. That means campfire cooking. On this week's edition of Food Friday, a cookbook author shares her love of cooking outdoors and some favorite campfire recipes. First, there's a big gender imbalance when it comes to housework and household planning in the United States. While things may have changed a little over the years, women still end up doing a lot more of that work, even in households where both spouses work full-time outside of the home. Our next guest says couples are happier when that work is divided up more evenly, and we can learn from examples of couples that have figured out ways to keep things more equal. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see this in your household? Does one partner do a lot more of the housework? And how about keeping tabs on all those details, especially when kids are involved? Or have you made efforts to balance things out? What worked? What didn't? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Kate Mangino is a facilitator and gender expert who works with international nonprofits. Her new book is Equal Partners, Improving Gender Equality at Home. Kate, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start with the basics here. When we've got a couple, both partners are working full time or thereabouts, and let's stick with a man and woman couple for now, though you look at different configurations. What do we know about how the housework breaks down in that kind of household?
So what the word that a lot of researchers use nowadays is neo-traditional, which is the most common couple that we see in North America right now. It's both parents or both partners do work outside of the home, do contribute to household income, but the vast majority of those household chores falls on one person over the other. And in different sex couples, the trend is that it falls on the woman, that she does about twice as much work in the home than her male partner. So if you think about quantifying that over time, if a man puts in 10 hours a week doing chores, caregiving, whatever, she's putting in 20. And over time, that really adds up to a very significant amount.
And let's talk about what we mean by work. And I'll own up to something here. A lot of times I think I used to think about just the doing of stuff. You're washing the dishes, going to get groceries or whatever. And I think we're pretty close to even, my wife and I. I know all guys probably say that, but I think we were close. But there was a whole nother category that I didn't take into account. And you talk about in your book, some people call it emotional labor or cognitive labor. I call it logistical, the planning, the keeping tabs on stuff, the agenda. And boy, if when I started mapping that out, that was very much not even. And I wasn't doing more of it. That's pretty common, right?
It's very common, and I appreciate you having that introspection and talking about that there is the doing. There are the physical tasks, and that does take a lot of time. It's unloading the dishwasher, folding the laundry, cooking food, doing grocery shopping, and that does take up a lot of time. But you're right. What I call cognitive labor, but it has lots of different terms, it's really kind of project management work. It's anticipating what needs to be done. It's looking forward. It is managing time, managing schedules, not just RSVPing to that birthday party invitation, but calling the parents of the kid whose party it is. What kind of presents do they like? Making sure you have time to stop and get that present, making sure you wrap it in time. There are all these little mini steps that happen in every process around the household. Decisions have to be made. There's always some sort of monitoring process. Did I make a good decision? Do I need to make changes in the future? And all of that cognitive labor is very exhausting, to be honest. And it's often not tracked in data, because we ask couples and research to take notes in time journals. But cognitive labor can happen when you're in the shower, when you're driving to work, when you're exercising, and we're often not capturing the hours that people spent doing cognitive labor.
You make the case that, you know, this setup isn't great for the partner who ends up doing all the work, but it's also kind of bad for the person who's not doing so much work. And when you started to look at couples where things were more evenly divided, both parties ended up being happier. Why is that?
Precisely. I think that it's easier to notice how it's harder for the woman, for the cognitive laborer. We see limitations in her professional life, in her income earning ability, in her emotional health and day-to-day happiness. But we also see that in her male partner. When men are pigeonholed into that income generation role, when they are only seen as someone who helps out in the home but really doesn't take responsibility for contributions or cognitive labor, we sort of, I would say, subconsciously push him away from caregiving roles, from emotional bonding, from having deeper relationships with children, deeper relationships with their spouse. And for research for my book, I identified and interviewed 40 men who are living as equal partners. So they meet my definition of doing half of the physical and cognitive tasks in their home. And when I interviewed them, I asked them, you know, what did you have to give up to live this way? And they very quickly corrected me and said, oh, no, I'm not giving anything up. I am living the life that I want to live because the rewards far outweigh any sacrifices. I have meaningful relationships with my family members. I don't have to act a certain way. I don't have to posture. I can be my own genuine self. And that those kind of relationships were really worth it for them. It was more important than having some extra leisure time.
Talking to Kate Mangino about her new book. It's called Equal Partners, Improving Gender Equality at Home. You can join in with your questions, maybe your experiences, at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Mary is with us in Madison. Mary, hi. Are you there, Mary? Not hearing Mary. Let's go to Steve then in Sun Prairie. Steve, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Obviously, I haven't done extensive research, but I have a lot of male friends, and we have conversations about these types of things. And the consensus seems to be, at least with people that I know, is that men do the outside work, the back-breaking stuff, and women seem to do more of the internal stuff of the house. And the reasoning why that is a lot of the men gave up, because women have a certain way of doing things, and if the man deviates, it causes friction, as opposed to the woman being more open-minded that there might be a different way of doing things. So it's easier for the men to say, you know, I'm not going to focus on that.
Steve, thanks for the call. And Kate, this is something you heard in your research from the book. This is not just Steve and his buddies we're talking about here.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that Steve called in and raised this point. You're absolutely right. Traditionally speaking, women do indoor tasks. And they're also routine tasks, things that have to happen every single day. If you skip a day of cleaning up the kitchen or you don't feed the kids, you know about it. That's not something you can give up easily. Whereas men tend to do outside coded tasks that are intermittent. So if you do skip a weekend of mowing the lawn or you don't get the light bulb switched, you don't necessarily notice it. So male coded tasks have a bit more flexibility. And in that flexibility, there's a bit more choice and room for not just error, but room for, you know, something different, right? So if you do skip your tasks for 1 or 2 days, it's okay. Whereas female coded tasks tend to be those relentless things that have to happen every single day. And I also agree with Steve that sometimes we have this notion that there's a right way of doing things and a wrong way. I talk about this head on in my book. I realize it's an unpopular topic sometimes to bring up with women, but maternal gatekeeping is a very real thing. And this all plays back into our gender norms, which I really get into in detail in the book. And I talk about how we raise boys and girls differently. We raise them to have different values. We raise boys to value income generation, and we raise girls to value domestic work. And that very much translates into the roles that we take on as adults. And sometimes a woman, oftentimes, and I'm guilty of this as well, we value ourselves based on the level of cleanliness in our home, what kind of lunches our kids pack for school, how cute the Halloween costumes are on October 31st. And men don't feel judged for those things in the home. They kind of get a pass. So that does translate into bickering in the household about who's going to do what the quality level is, taking control. I think it's really healthy for couples to have a conversation. What do you feel like you're judged for? What do you feel like you have to do? And to see if you can mix up some of those chores a little bit. So, you know, women are stretching themselves to do more male-coded tasks and vice versa, so we don't get trapped in these patterns.
Steve, thanks for that call. And Kate, that all points to, I think, a key takeaway of your book, which is not men are lazy, am I right? It's
Absolutely
these are things
not.
Coming from a much deeper, a long-term historical place.
Absolutely. We are all survivors of gendered norms and gendered upbringing, and they're all connected to each other. What women are raised to do is directly connected to what men are raised to do. And I think it can be trapped. It feels like a trap for all of us, and it can be a little bit suffocating. Some of us are okay with our gendered roles. We're quite comfortable with it. But those of us who don't really naturally fit with what we're supposed to do with our gender identity, it can feel very limiting.
We're talking to Kate Mangino about her new book. It's called Equal Partners, Improving Gender Equality at Home. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has this been a frustration in your house? The division of household labor, maybe between two working parents, say. What are some of the frustrations? What are some of the solutions you found along the way? If you have advice, maybe to share with others, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with gender expert Kate Mangino. Her new book is called Equal Partners, Improving Gender Equality at Home. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about our guest research, or maybe the experience in the household you're running right now, or the one you grew up in. What did that division of labor look like? Did it cause stress? Did you find ways to work through that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Alyssa is with us in Sparta. Alyssa, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So my partner and I have been together for about 15 years and married for 10. He's male. He's very willing to help with things, but I have to prompt that or request that assistance with household tasks and children, et cetera. And it's like the observation is not as present with him as it is for me. So I often have to anticipate the needs. He's unable to do that. I'm just wondering if the author could speak to any research that she gathered in writing the book, if that's kind of typical of relationships.
Thanks for that call. Alyssa, I'm guessing, is very much not alone, Kate.
Alyssa is definitely not alone. I'm really thankful that you called in and shared that personal story. But what you're explaining is very much on par with what the majority of American households are experiencing in that neo-traditional relationship where one person is really sort of a manager of the home and the other person takes this helper role. And as you've experienced yourself and a lot of us have experienced in the past, being that manager is incredibly time consuming, and making a list of tasks for someone else to do is in itself work. And then of course you have to do all the follow-up to make sure that they've done the work. So, you know, I think one thing that I try to propose in my book is that we haven't reached gender equality, that this is not as good as it gets. We are absolutely in a better place than we were in the 50s and 60s. We've come a long way. But I'd like to think of ourselves right now at a milestone and not an endpoint. And I think that this helper supervisor role where we seem to get stuck right now, I'm hoping that with enough conversation and intentional work, we can continue on this pathway and in the future decades really get towards something that feels more equitable.
Alyssa, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Kate, I can think of all sorts of bad ways to tackle the problem of unequal division of housework. But you, the heart of your book really is those 40 people you talk to who really exemplify a more equal way of doing things. What were some of the things that struck you first and foremost about how these couples made that happen?
So it was really interesting when I learned it, when I, you know, talked about where they sort of came from. They were 40 unique stories. They were 40 men from around the United States, a few in Canada. Really didn't see too many patterns in their upbringing. Mm-hmm. A few patterns, like a quarter of them came from single mom households, but not too many unanimous stories. However, when it came to making it work now, they all had the common belief that this was best for them because they wanted to have a great, solid relationship and that this made them happy, that they liked contributing, that they wanted to be an equal partner, both to support their spouse's professional life, but also to support their spouse's emotional health. So I think that the commonality was about how they live today as opposed to where they came from. And in terms of tactics, you know, I heard lots of different ideas. Some people had weekly check-ins. Some people had monthly check-ins. Some people spoke more spontaneously. But all of them had very open communication with each other, and they really tackled the cognitive labor and made sure to divide that. Some people switched on and off. So for a year, one person would do all the feeding and the other person would do the laundry, and then they would switch so that no one felt like they were stuck doing a job they didn't want to do. There were lots of different examples. So I think there's many ways to be successful.
We're talking to Kate Mangino, author of the new book, Equal Partners, Improving Gender Equality at Home. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your household experience when it comes to how you divvy up the tasks and the planning of those tasks. Maybe some solutions you've found along the way. 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@wpr.org. Kate, part of this is a mindset thing. One thing that struck me, at least one of the men you talked to, maybe more than one, took the role of the idea of a man as a provider for their family and kind of rethought that. And it might mean bring in money, but it might also mean, you know, providing that more a meal in the morning for a kid or providing a clean home. Can you talk about that sort of twist on the mindset?
Absolutely. I think we've long coded men as being the providers, right? And sometimes we think of it in an old-fashioned way of sort of bringing home a paycheck. But providing for your family can look like many different things. It could be time spent. It could be caregiving for an infant or an older family member. It could be taking care of laundry or cleaning or pets. There's lots of different ways you can provide for your family. I had a great story from a man named Jack who's up in Vermont. And his wife is a physician and made enough money for their family. And he didn't need to bring in extra income, but he had two little kids and his wife had a demanding job. And he realized what I need to do to provide for my family right now is to be present and to spend time with my kids and be the parent who is home and who's there for them. And so he took a different job that would allow him that time. So I do think that, and this is something that I think the greater community could do. This isn't just about individual nuclear households, but if all of us collectively embraced this idea that parents provide for their family in lots of different ways, and instead of coding it about what men do and what women do, just think about what parents do as a whole. Yes, we bring home income to buy physical things, and we provide time and caregiving as well.
You also, in your book, try to learn from same-sex couples who, you know, they can't just fall in naturally to the gender roles they grew up with. What kind of things can we learn from them?
So data shows us that, on a whole, same-sex couples are more equitable than different-sex couples, but still fall into this female-coded role and male-coded role. Oftentimes, especially this happens with kids because the school day is shorter than the workday. Doctors and dentists and daycare providers and camp directors ask for one parent contact, right? So one person automatically sort of has an expertise in the domestic work and one person, you know, has an expertise on income generation. But I do think that same-sex couples are on a whole sometimes more willing to try something different because they've already been forced to think through their own gender identity in the past. So, but I do think it's unfortunate and interesting that they can fall into gendered patterns even when their own gender doesn't match that role that they're exhibiting. And I think that's another important idea that these are roles. They're not connected to us biologically. They are things that we perform because of what we learn in our society and what's role modeled to us.
Let's bring on another caller now. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. I wanted to share that when I was first married, the biggest fight that I had with my new husband was whether or not we were going to hire a cleaning lady. Because he said we weren't the kind of people to have a cleaning lady. And I said, well, I was. And anyway, he ended up liking her so much, he would buy her favorite soda and everything. And I did win that argument, I guess. But
Kate,
I didn't feel like cleaning either, so
Kate, thanks a lot. Kate, again, I think this might be a pretty common argument.
It is a common argument. I'm glad that she brought up that this happened early in her relationship. I've gotten some early feedback from readers in their, you know, in their 20s, like the younger millennials and the Gen Z who are just starting out. And they didn't, you know, they had this sort of unspoken feeling that things weren't quite balanced in their new households, but they couldn't put it into words. And they're finding this idea of cognitive labor helpful so that it's something they can talk about early in their relationships and set some boundaries for themselves. So good on you for setting a boundary about how to maybe outsource some work so that you both have equal time for leisure.
Thanks for that call. And briefly, Kate, as we wrap up, it seems like the key is to think and talk about these things, because if we don't, we're just going to fall into a pattern that may not be great.
Absolutely true. I think that that's the number one learning here is, you know, have an intentional understanding of what those gendered roles are. Think through what's been role modeled to you. What do I like? What would I like to repeat? And what are the things that I might want to change for my life and for the next generation?
Kate, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for your time.
That's Kate Mangino, facilitator and gender expert. We talked to her today about her new book. It's called Equal Partners, Improving Gender Equality at Home. You can still share your stories. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up after the news, it's Food Friday. A cookbook author and camping pro tells us how to make delicious meals on your next camping trip. And you can share your favorite campfire recipes. You can get started right now, by the way. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us about your campfire cookery favorites. And check out some recipes from our guest, WPR.org/Food Friday, to get ready for your camping trip, maybe this weekend. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.